This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
I almost wore all denim today.
Did you? I don't know why. I was like, the denim look will be for Chris.
I appreciate that.
I just...
I know what that's like. I'd be like, I'm wearing this one for this person.
Yeah.
Or for this thing.
You get it. You get it.
I have to moderate a panel at a fashion conference tomorrow on AI.
Really?
And I was like, ooh, I was like, oh, there's one thing I got that has like technology built into it.
Really?
Yeah.
Like what? Like chips?
Like an NFC. Like it's a kind of like a or RFID tag. So you can like,
yeah.
And I haven't even done it yet.
My passport.
Where are you going?
Holder. Where am I going? Away. My passport holder has an RFID thing in it to protect it from people stealing my identity or something like that. I don't understand the technology.
You're like, obviously been stolen?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
On several occasions.
Several?
So many people want to be me.
So, are we recording it or are we just talking?
No, we're just talking shit. Okay.
I don't care.
No, it's not, he might be recording it. If he is, then we'll
yeah,
use
there's
it.
Always, you know.
We'll use it. We'll use it. Fuck it.
Use it.
Okay, this is Virgie Rodriguez. Welcome to A Race of Your Own, where we talk about inspiration that leads to resilience. And today's guest has a lot of things that I want to cover. He's an award-winning innovation advocate. He's a thought leader. He's an author. He's a host, as well as a Detroit native. He's a creator and host of Innovation Crush podcast, which has over 750,000 global subscribers, a multimedia host. He has his number one best-selling book called Crushing the Box, 10 Essential Rules for Breaking Essential Rules. And he has applied his expertise to help individuals and organizations increase their innovation potential. Welcome to the show, Chris Denton.
Hey.
Hey.
Studio audience.
I'm so excited. Okay. I'm so excited to have you here because you were one of the first people I reached out to when I decided to do this series. And I was like, hey, Chris. You know, I really like what you're doing and I like the way you do it. So I want to do it too. And then
I remember that conversation.
Yeah. And the advice you gave me was don't fuck it up. And I was like, thanks. I'm ready now. So thanks for being here and taking out some time because you are one busy individual.
Sometimes, you know, it's ebbs and flows.
Really?
Sorry about that advice I gave you, but. Look at you. You didn't fuck
but
it
look,
up.
But look at me you now.
You got to give the person the rule that they need. Remember in The Matrix when the Oracle told Neo he wasn't the one and he went away all mad? And
yeah.
She's like, why'd you tell
why
me?
He was
like,
man.
I told him what he needed here.
Right. I get it. So I'm Neo in this.
Yes, exactly.
Are you the Oracle? So they say.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm in my own Matrix right now. Okay, so I didn't even touch this other thing. And Visionology, your personal coaching and branding
yes.
as well.
Yep.
And you just told me something right before we started that you're like, I break myself up in three parts.
I do.
And those parts are?
So what I like to say is, to kind of like help truncate it all, I go, I like to help people unlock new levels of ingenuity.
Yeah.
One is through innovation coaching. Two is through content and storytelling. And three, I learned psychedelic facilitation and got trained in that and took a trauma recovery course. So sometimes I'm using one or all three of those skills or tools to like help people advance forward.
Nice. And then can we, of course, the first one I want to talk about
Which is?
The psychedelic.
Mm-hmm.
No, but the fact that it's tied into the trauma, right? Mm-hmm. And healing, and I use the word healing lightly.
Yeah, of course.
But, you know, this is, it's such a, you know, a lot of people talk about, they're like, ew. They just think, they hear psychedelic, they're like, ew, shrooms. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's just where their head goes. Or like,
yeah.
LSD or something. Like, I don't know.
Why is it so sinister?
Because it's always like, that's the voice of people.
Dirty hippies.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, let's do LSD and listen to Grateful Dead. You know, it's like, it's always that. But
yeah.
But from your perspective, or from kind of the way you explained
it. No, I think you're absolutely right. Like, I was a huge stigma person. I was like, that's for a certain demographic, for me, blah, blah, blah. And then I got invited to an experience by somebody I trusted, and I was like, okay. And it was a psilocybin mushroom experience, and immediately came out of that and was like, more people of color need to experience this.
What I experienced. With psilocybin mushroom versus...
Well, it's functional mushrooms, right? Exactly. So like, the functional mushrooms do different things for your cognitive and digestive health. And then the psychedelic mushrooms are a little bit more psychedelic, right? And so they have some things in there that fire off in your brain and your body, and kind of they become teachers, right? Like, and can peel back layers of clarity and awareness and all sorts of things. So, and there's a whole like biology to it, and every process involves, I like to look at it as a 3-part process. One is intake. Let's understand what you might be going through. B, if there's any sort of medications you might be on or other things that are going on that just to be aware of in the administering of the medicine, right? 2 is the actual experience. Sometimes it's a microdosing experience. Sometimes it's a deep journey. And then 3 is the integration, which, you know, as the industry starts to escalate and crescendo in sort of psychedelics across the country, if not around the world, it's like the integration part is like the most important part, mm-hmm. right? Because you may have some great level of clarity and something that's mind blowing or something that's really symbolic. And then you're like, well, where does this play out to me in my job or as a parent or, you know, as just Joe Schmo citizen? Mm-hmm. So helping to sort of take that apart is a big part of the, you know, the experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's been really great. Like, you know, it is, unfortunately, it's only legal to administer in Colorado and Oregon.
Okay.
And so there's a, you know, there's a whole like ecosystems built in those two states. You start to see like a lot more other kinds of clinics and things pop up. So in certain states like California, ketamine is legal. I don't work with ketamine, but there's other forms of psychedelic therapies that are available. So
I didn't know that about ketamine.
Oh, see?
Now you know. See, now I learned something new.
Yeah, you can walk out the door and go get you some.
And I might just have it. No. But that's amazing. And yeah. I think that, you know, when you bring in this like transformative aspect to it, you know, that's amazing because it's you're helping people.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for like most of the people that I work with, I always ask if they have a therapist or do they have some other form of spiritual practice. Do you go to church? Like, what, something? Mm-hmm. Are you reading books? Like, are you doing some, like, approaching this from other angles as well? Because this alone, yeah, sure, it can move the needle, but I think to have that greater clarity and understanding or advancement, I guess, it's what other tools are you working with, right? And you start to be able to draw parallels or see, I read that and saw this, or this is what I was thinking when I was in the experience. But then I talked to my therapist about that. Like, there's a lot of different ways to like continue opening the package.
Yeah. And it sounds like there's so much stigma.
Yeah, around absolutely. It.
Like, so much stigma. And so, but I also know so many people that are like, oh my God, you have to try shrooms. You have to try this experience and we have to do it together. You know, and I'm like, I'm always like, I don't know. Because there is such a stigma.
There's a stigma. I talk to so many people. They're like, oh, I did it years ago and it was terrible. Or right. I had a, you know, somebody, there's an old zoo that kind of looks like all haunted. And a friend of mine was like, yeah, I don't know, man. The last time We were at the zoo. I was like, why would you do mushrooms at the old abandoned zoo? That sounds like a terrible idea.
Terrible.
Right? Like, so so a lot of it also is just kind of like resetting the bar with people. Like, where are you? What do, you know, what do you understand? What right. don't you understand? And I don't know all of it, but, you know, I have some pretty good mentors in the space and some pretty good resources that I can mm-hmm. always go to try to, like, again, unpack, like, what some experiences might be. I mean, mm-hmm. I've worked with people who are addicts. I've worked with people who are just like, what else is there? Right? Like, this, so it's a wide spectrum of human experience.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, interestingly enough, it's what led me into my innovation coaching. Because there was a friend of mine who I worked with, who I really admire, and we had just been having some personal conversations. This person has been sober all of their life, not a drop of alcohol, nothing. And was like, hey, I realize I need to work on some stuff. And it was kind of focused on, centered on his career. And he's like, but I don't know if that's for me. And I was like, you know what? I've been toying around with this idea for a while. Let me get back to you in a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I created Visionology. So it's this 11-session innovation coaching program. But it's a lot of the same mechanics as you would work with somebody through a therapeutic process. It's like, there's an 80%, at least in the beginning, what I like to call like the invisible blocks.
Mm-hmm,
it's like,
you
know, and then there's 20%. What's your tactics, strategies, creative process, et cetera, et cetera.
Wow.
And then over the course of time, that ratio begins to shift where it's like, all right, 20% of it is just like the invisible emotional intelligent check-ins. And the 80% becomes like, you know, what's the strategy behind this product, service, you know, idea, et cetera, et cetera. And that can be a small team at a corporation or an individual entrepreneur on their own journey. But the whole idea is like, how can I see myself differently and in the quest, in the pursuit of this thing that I'm creating?
Right.
And you change your relationship with it, you start to see different results, you know?
Right.
So it's, but it's cool. Like, it's, I always found that even when I was like working in the innovation economy, just like for agencies or advising startups, most of the reasons good ideas didn't happen weren't because of the idea itself. It was usually because of some human that was like scared about losing their job and were, they tried something 2 times ago and failed or got burned by a partner or, you know, or they've been at the same thing for 3 years and they haven't had a breakthrough. And it's like, let's unpack some of the emotional hurdles that that come along with career journeys, because there's not a lot of places to talk about that.
And to what you're saying, see, for me, and I was, and probably maybe for some, this is going to be so unhinged and I love it. You know, there's people that, you know, this it, when we're talking about innovation, when we're talking about ideas, right? We live in a world where social media.
In a world.
Where it's dark. We live in a world that is just so much social media. We are constantly being fed something, which has always been like that, even growing up, right? Television, movies, whatever. But like social media is just like quadruple that, right? And we've talked about this before too, outside of here, where it's like, I came up with this idea. And then like, you know, I'm seeing, for instance, this is a perfect example. Like even talking about like City of Detroit, I had like this idea with a friend of mine had a film concept. He had the rights to tell somebody's story out of Detroit. And I was like, ooh, I came up with this marketing idea for like the City of Detroit. And like it would be great to like, you know, make the backdrop and like pump the city and like so much that's going on with the city now. And like, you know, they're really pumping in. And I'm like, wait, but that's an idea I had. And it's like the universe kind of being like, well, did the universe hear me? Like, are you listening to me?
Yeah.
So now you see the outside world showing you an idea, you know, and it's so innovative, you know,
and,
I mean, there's so many, right, ideas. Yeah. But it's like, it's so innovative, which then makes me as a creative go, that was my idea, universe. Why are you listening? You know what I mean? Like,
I think if you've read Rick Rubin's book, Creativity, it's so good. Such
is
a great
it?
Book. And okay. Or you can, oddly, I rarely listen to or watch podcasts, except for this one.
You better.
But
you
there's a great interview with Rick Rubin and Jay Shetty, And then in Rick's book, he talks about that very thing. He's like, sometimes you have a great idea and all of a sudden you see it in the world.
Yeah.
And you're like, and the way he says it is that it's not necessarily that someone stole your idea. It's right. more that it was that idea's time to be born. And you, so you went to start talking about the universe and the sort of mysticism of it all. That's a, you know, it's, for some, it's a very real thing. It's a very real part of the creative process and the, you know, and that ability to like, I always look at that as like, okay, I'm always on the right track. Right. Mm-hmm. If I, maybe it's not that idea
the
that I get to do.
Cause
yeah, my whiteboard is filled with like things I'll probably never, ever get to. And sometimes I'm like, ah, shit, that's the one I should have worked on.
Right.
Instead of this wild, kooky thing that I'm like, ooh.
So do you believe in just like spitting out, like whether that's on a mood board or like whatever, just like sitting down and just spitting out a ton of ideas versus like picking one and focusing on one? You know what I mean? Because in that particular situation, that's kind of what happened. I was like focusing on one and like hoping for one and wishing for one. And then it was just like, but the universe shows me that, right?
Yeah.
So at that point, it's like, well, okay, cool. I'm on the right track. Well, at least I have three others. But then mm-hmm. some people would say, no, pick one and focus on one.
It depends on the individual, right? Like some people are multi-hyphenates. I have friends who are like fashion designers, actors, producers, run a nonprofit, run a marketing company. I'm thinking of one person in particular. And they do all these things. They have one primary like vocation.
Job, right.
Yeah, exactly. That is their main thing. But they do all those things to a really high level.
Yeah.
And, you know, but that person's brain can function that way. Right.
Right.
And I think you have to
Without psychedelics.
Yeah. And you have to. Right, exactly. Right, yeah. Right. You know, all psychedelics would be really crazy.
Right. Right.
No, I think so. You have to understand who you are. And so like even in my book, my first chapter, I talk about empathy. And empathy isn't just understanding the people that you're working with and the people that you're creating for. Is also understanding yourself and like how, you know, what moves you, what motivates you, what makes you feel at ease and at peace. Mm-hmm. And I know even in my own world, yes, I have like a lot of different buckets of things that I'm interested in and things that I do. But I also, because of my brain, I have to carve out very specific time to focus on each of those things.
Mm.
Otherwise, like, I will go haywire in a day if I'm talking about project A here, project C there, having a serious conversation. And then one meeting moves and I've got to keep switching brain modes. So, you know, it's organizing around how you can have your best output. And then on top of that, yes, it's like, I don't know, out of the 20 ideas on my whiteboard, I have to go, which one do I feel most passionate about? You know, because we can easily ask the business question, like, all right, what's happening in the, what's happening on social media right now? Mm-hmm. What's trending on whatever platform? What's happening in the startup ecosystem? Whatever your mechanism is, it's like there's that pull, which is the facts and where the data is pointing.
Yeah.
And then there's the fun of just kind of following your intuition, which is a really learned habit. You know, some of us can tap into it a lot easier than others. And some like me, I'm like, I have shiny object syndrome. Like, I'm always like, ooh, that looks, ah, wait,
that looks interesting.
Let me put this down and like go right over there. Like, wait, what about us?
Right.
So I have to really manage my like personality and my like execution style.
Interesting. Okay. And that's, and that, and yes.
Yes.
Because I feel like for me, I don't, it fluctuates. It goes from being focused on one and being like so passionate about, because I treat them as like these little babies. Like I'm just like, oh, it's like this little thing and it's so cute. And then
some of them babies gotta die.
Oh man.
Kill the babies.
No. No.
No, there's a platform I like to use called My Human Design. And it's just like, it's kind of like a personality profile. Go ahead.
It's called Human Design.
Yes. Human Design is a practice. But it's like if you did a disc assessment or astrology, like whatever you
like a chart for astrology.
You go to understand yourself.
I've heard about this and I don't get it. It's very confusing.
It's very easy. Download the app. Did you download the app? I think I'm
a generator.
Yes, me too. So here's the thing about generators, right?
Okay.
And this is what was true for me is like, you have to learn the difference between what you're passionate about and what you're flattered by. This is just one component, right? Because sometimes you'll do a job on a project or work with somebody or build something and people go, I like that. Great job, Virgie.
Right.
Can you come do that for us? And you're like, yeah, I'll do it. And, you know, as maybe for those types of people as kids, as like most of us, your parents told you good job when you did right. something well, and they probably told you you were on punishment when you messed up.
Yeah.
So we start to seek that emotional connection to like, good job, good job. So now I'm doing these things that I'm good at,
right.
but I'm not passionate about. Right. And okay. so I have to like sometimes shut out the voice of the world and go like, oh, this doesn't make sense. Or why would you do that? Or come do this with us. Or, hey, remember last time you did? I was like, last time isn't right now.
Right.
Right. So I have to really tap into like, am I emotionally connected to whatever it is I'm about to step into? Genuinely. So even when I look at my whiteboard, there are some things that are hard to eliminate, but I know which ones actually, even in my book, I talk about like the goosebump ideas.
Mm,
right? There's you might have 20 ideas, but a couple of them are going to be the ones that give you the goosebumps. You're like,
yeah, ooh,
like all right, that's
one.
The one I need. Yeah. And sometimes there's somatic indicators. Sometimes it's an intellectual indicator.
Yeah.
Or sometimes you're like, oh, somebody already did that. All right.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. I for some reason I struggle with. You know, and I wonder if like viewers struggle with that too. It's like you get so stuck on it that like it's literally like a death. Yes, it's like I have to watch it die.
But that's
not what I wanted.
That's part of the process, though. I think you know when we talk about grief, for instance, right? Most of us think of grief in the sense of death, but grief is really like leaving something familiar behind.
Right.
Right. So if let's say you get a promotion. At your job, and you're like, I used to manage 5 people here, now I got 20 people here, more money, more free time because I can delegate more, et cetera, et cetera. It should be a happy occasion, and it probably is. And then 3 months into it, you start feeling like some kind of way, right? Because you've left something familiar behind. You don't know these new people that you're working with. You don't know all the processes that go along with this new responsibility, et cetera, fill in the blank. And I think we, you know, in many cases, we owe it to ourselves to kind of just like mourn a loss, even if you're headed in a positive direction.
Yeah.
And so it's that sort of like, so whether that idea didn't happen, like even if it's just for 2 minutes and you go like, oh, I do feel shitty about having lost that thing.
Because
most of us have been trained to go like, well, on to the next one.
Right.
Which, you know, which is also a valid skill. But if you couple it with just acknowledging that it kind of hurt. You know, or that it, even the idea that it might have hurt.
And that's where I find the resilience. That's why, you know, part of like the series is like still being resilient. It's like I've learned alchemy.
Yeah.
You know, alchemizing stuff and kind of channeling that or funneling that in another direction, which it still might be that in another way.
Yeah.
You know, and it's interesting and it's fascinating to watch because I've kind of accepted, and I want to dig into your essential rules for breaking essential rules because I'm a rule breaker and I love breaking rules. Yeah. And so, but, you know, I've learned to kind of just accept and just be still. And I talked about this with another guest, which was just like being still, like being in the present, but really just shutting up, just shutting it all. There's so many distractions. There's so much outside shit going on constantly. I mean, even just like you're sitting at home. A lot of us work from home. So we're sitting at home. Viewers, I'm sure, sit at home, work from home. You're on a computer. Construction across you. You're about to get on a phone call. And there's the one
day. It's my dog barking at the garbage truck. That's the one that always gets me.
Always. And you're like, I just wanted some peace. So I'm just learning to, even if the dog barks, or even there's a construction truck or whatever, to just don't let it distract, right? That has been such a big kind of lesson in all of it. And in creating, it, which is to me innovation, and maybe that's not the correct definition of that. But they cross, I'm sure. But at least in my world, they do. I don't know. You know, really just like kind of shutting it all out, including my brain.
Right.
Because it's not necessarily sometimes always just like, all right, let me just get on my, like I was telling another guest, it's like, oh, I can order food from my phone. I can order, freaking sheets, you know, on Amazon. I can watch a whole TV series. I can do so much on my phone. It's so distracting.
Yeah.
But it's even once you shut that down, shutting your brain off to be like, stop the limiting thoughts, the limiting beliefs, the, I gotta do this, I gotta do that.
I will tell you, like, the...
And do psychedelics help with that?
They can. I mean, it, sure, you know, yeah. It's like, think about what you're thinking about, right? Kind of thing. And like, I feel like when you first start to enter a transformational period of your life, the task of monitoring your thoughts is the most mindfuck of a task you can do, because like every thought you catch, you're like, oh, I'm doing it again. Oh, there's another one. And you also have to like go to work, show up, do all the things. You're like,
all the things.
But then, and eventually, hopefully, it almost feels like you're kind of running around catching butterflies, right? Like,
oh my God.
Oh, there's one, like, which is a little bit more of a joyous task than like reaching into a, you know, a pool full of piranhas and trying to grab one and throw it out, right? Like,
until the pool's empty.
And stillness is, it's a practice, right? I think most of us like, oh, I've been meditating for 2 months and whatever.
I'm a guru.
I mean, my last sort of, I don't know, like rocky period was probably about 2.5-3 years. And during that time, I was like, I heard this quote recently that I was like, that's what it is, which is discipline is the highest form of self-love.
Mm-hmm.
And
I've heard that too.
And I lost like a lot of, you know, job opportunities and, you know, a lot of big changes in my life and some losses and so on and so forth. And I was just like, kind of the only thing I have right now is for me to get up every morning at 5:30, do my journaling, do my meditation and stick to it. And there were days I was like journaling, making a gratitude list with tears in my eyes. And there's only three things on the
letting
list.
Letting that emotion out.
Right. And so it's just this like, but through that, the stillness period gets longer and longer and longer. Your ability to sustain it. Because yes, the dog's going to bark at the garbage truck, right? metaphorically speaking. And you know, or the shiny object is going to show up and be like, well, this is what I was working on before. And now I can, you chase it and then it falls apart. You're like, well, what happened?
Right.
You know, cause that stillness is like, oh, was that flattery or was that, you know, passion?
Right.
And that's just one mechanism. I'm saying it's always just flattery or passion, but, everybody's different. And so kind of understanding nuances, triggers, desires, history, it takes a little bit of time. But yeah, and I think, yeah, sorry.
I'm like, yes, go more.
But that's why, you know, in hindsight, when I wrote, the book came out in 2018, and I didn't realize at the time that I was writing like a book that was like 50% personal development and 50% like business tactics. I started with empathy because I was like, I worked for a marketing agency at the time and I had clients and then I had their customers that I always had to think about. And I also had to think about my team and the other teams that I'm working with. So it was always like a social navigation versus like, ooh, a creative process. So it was just one of my entry points.
Which is amazing.
It is.
Because it's like, amazing. And I always use the word amazing. I'm always like, because I can't think of another word. I really believe it. It is amazing. Like the work that you're doing is like, you can't do this work unless you're really fully 100% authentic. Like nobody's gonna buy.
Oh yeah, I'm stupid.
Nobody's gonna buy what you're selling, and not that you're even selling it. You're not really selling it in that sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
You were really going out into the world and wanting people to be innovative and encouraging their innovation.
We need it. Like it's not like is
you
like,
know
as much as I want it. It's also like, you look at anybody who's trying to solve a problem,
right?
Whether it's small, like, oh, how can my phone run faster? Or it's like, climate change is a thing and we need to fix it. And so I think also from a tactical standpoint, I've worked in AI and virtual reality. Like, so when you start thinking of innovation from a technology standpoint, I can also speak that language. I cannot make anything to save my life. I can't code. I just learned
how to make my first AI like character. It's literally me, but AI. And it's freaking weird because it looks nothing like me.
Not yet. You don't want it to look too much like you.
I don't want it to look like me at all.
Because it'll be talking to people on like your Tinder profiles and it'll be like, I didn't say that. Oh.
I don't do Tinder.
Virgie 2 said that.
I don't need to do Tinder.
I know. It's only an example.
I just thought I would throw that out there. I'm just kidding. But you know, because it's again, I talk about so many different things on here, but you know, I'm fascinated by like people and like what got them there,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's like, what got you here? What was this Chris, you as a kid growing up in Detroit? Like what got you here? Like what made you be like this person who is like so far ahead thinking? You know what I mean? There's a world of thought leaders and innovation mm-hmm. leaders, and I know, but like we don't see it so in the mainstream as much.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know. I got asked this question maybe like 5 or 6 years ago. And it was like, when did you get, it was framed differently. It was like,
I'm trying to look at you as like a kid running around. Like, were you just like, oh, look at this thing?
And
like,
I was just always, so here's the thing. I got asked that question once and I'd never thought about that before.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, like I have two older siblings.
Mm-hmm.
RIP, one of them died earlier this year. Yep. But they, by the time I came along, they're 12 and 13 years older than me. By the time I came along and was 4 or 5 years old, mm-hmm. I was kind of like an only child, right? Because they had mm-hmm. moved on, right. gone out of the house. And it was just me and my mom. And my mom had gone through a divorce the year I was born.
Mm-hmm.
And so she, at 33, had just like started going back to college and then was basically living her 20s out as a single mother of three mm-hmm. children, and was like taking belly dancing lessons and roller skating and then she taught fashion design. And you know, because I was I just went with her to a lot of places.
Classes, yeah.
And so I think later on, like, I just would try things. I tried stand-up comedy. I've been a comedy writer.
Right.
I've worked as an engineer at Chrysler after I graduated school.
Nice.
I was an RA. I was a student counselor. I was just like,
involved.
I'd never really said no too much, almost to a fault, like to a fault many times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as the years have gone by, I'm like, okay, like, let me put these pieces together of my lived experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And interests, and just kind of like, what? How can I make this make sense to everybody else?
Interesting.
And myself.
Right? You're like, and me too.
Yeah, because I'm like, how do I? And that's usually like, especially if I'm working with somebody who's a multi-hyphenate, it's like,
yeah,
how do I say this to people?
How do you rein it in?
And make it like, make it present as valuable to whomever I'm talking to, especially because we're all selling something at some point,
right.
So whether you're doing it on LinkedIn or you're doing it at a, you know, at a barbecue,
trying to sell this show,
right? Like, so how you present, how you explain, how you understand what it is that you do, and again, empathy also comes into like, I know not everybody's going to get what I'm talking about or be on the same level, and that could be somebody who's created a technology tool, written the script. And it's just like, what's my easiest way to explain this to a person? I had a friend of mine who started a business, and for about 30 minutes, I asked him, what does it do? For about 30 minutes, I was like,
You still didn't know what
it
did.
And I was like, hey, this is back when Twitter still had 140 characters.
Okay.
I was like, when you get back to, we were at a conference.
When you get back
to your hotel, it was Twitter at the time. Still. But I was like, when you get back to your room, try to tell me everything you told me in 140 characters or less.
Right.
So how do you get all that information? We do this, we do that,
tweet.
We care about this, this, that. And like, how do you get it down to like one sentence that you understand and other people understand?
Right.
So, because it's hard. It's hard to like go, I love all these things. And then.
But you can't do them all. I remember I was just having that thought the other day about like when I was a kid, I remember going to my mom and just, you know, being like, you know, I want to be an astronaut and I want to be a doctor and I want to be a dancer and I want to be, and she's like, you have to pick one. And I was like, why?
Yeah.
But
which isn't necessarily true. There was a great TED Talk and your listeners and viewers can go look it up.
Yes.
This woman gave us probably like a 5 or 10 minute talk about being a multi-potentialite. And it's just like, what has happened if I do want to be an astronaut and an author and a blah, blah, like fill in all the blanks. And, you know, and how do you foster that in a human being? I think it's generational. Like, I don't know. The downside to my mom's experience that I just explained was also like, this is how you do everything. Like, this is the method. And you do this, you do that, and then you do that. And I'm like, there's millions of possibilities of executions and existences, but I had to like undo that because it was subconscious that I was conditioned to believe like you go and you do and you like So there's not a lot of common language around how do you manage doing multiple things. And granted, there is value to like doing one thing and being focused and honed
Definitely.
In. You know, and it's just like that balance. This is going to sound a little strange. I was in Bend, Oregon last week. And I had this experience where I was doing, a friend of mine was leading a meditation like mm-hmm. outside. Mm-hmm. And basically I was looking at a rabbit. I saw a rabbit. And, okay. And then he said something about a falcon. And I was like, okay. But a couple hours later, we were just hanging out. And he was like, yeah, a falcon landed behind you. And I was like, what? Like, he's like, you know, maybe like 10 feet from
And you
like,
didn't know it was there?
I didn't know. Because he was standing behind me. And he started talking about how falcons in some cultures represent focus, right? And that's how they hunt, where some birds of prey will like, they'll hover
yes.
and look like falcons are like, nope, that's a, and rabbits, what, they scurry.
Oh.
So this difference between focus and like flittering about, right? And both existences are real and they mm-hmm, exist, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. but that rabbit was about to get tore up
by that falcon.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's a great kind of like scenario there. Like just even thinking of it, like seeing that, like, do you want to be the scattery bunny or do you want to be the focused falcon?
Yes.
And that's what I'm going to title this episode. Be a focused falcon.
Ooh, nice. I was going to say the falcon and the rabbit, but that sounds like a fable. I'm about to go. See, now I got another idea for the whiteboard. Yeah.
Yeah.
Falcon and the rabbit.
Falcon and the rabbit.
Forget the tortoise and the hare.
That's
1841.
Done. Yeah. That's done. This is 2024, right. 25 almost.
Almost 100 years later.
Yes.
We got a new fable.
We got a new fable. We have a new fable. It's the focused falcon and the scurried rabbit.
Yes. Scurred.
Scurred rabbit.
Don't be scurred.
Don't be scurred at all. So if there's like, there's a quote that I found on you, and I gotta start wrapping this up a little bit here. But
oh, there's a clock there.
There is.
I feel like it's partially my fault. Cause
no, not at all. I just like having these conversations.
Go on, ask
just
him.
Like, get, you know, move. Dipping into this stuff. Now he's telling me how to run my own podcast.
We only have
Jesus.
Yes.
So Forbes quoted you as saying,
what?
Well, Forbes.com, the more limited you are, the more creative you have to be. Time constraints eliminate second guesses. Constraint is a unifier.
Yes. So some of the best innovations.
Divulge.
I'm being mindful of time. Some of the best innovations come from constraint, right? You don't have enough time, money, people, resources, mm-hmm. and you're like, but I need to get this done.
Right.
So innovation isn't always like the outcome. For me, it's like an operating system. It's like, how, you know, what are all the moving bits and pieces that go into the machine that creates the thing? So, and a lot of times if you give, I think it was, there's a director who like made some really classic low budget movies, mm-hmm. like Clerks, mm-hmm. Kevin,
yeah.
I'm drawing a blank.
I was going to say the wrong Kevin.
But he was like, you give me.
I was going to say Kevin Costner.
No, it is Kevin though. And beard, yeah. You guys wearing hockey jerseys.
Yeah,
I feel
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Clerks was like some really low budget movie. And then he's like, you give me $20 million, I'll make a shitty $20 million movie because it's too much, it's too right. many options.
Right.
Right. When it's go time and this is all you got, it's like people figure it out. Every startup that's whether you bootstrap or whatever. I mean, you think right. about Uber, like they didn't have an investor at the beginning. Right?
Right.
So it was like, okay, how do we build this technology tool and let people be aware of it? And then it grows into this big behemoth. Mm-hmm. But like the types of restraint that goes into like the early stages of any idea.
Yeah.
Is actually a value. Restraint. Yeah.
That's fascinating because you're right.
Yeah.
Because you can make...
I mean, look at hip hop, right? It's like, we don't have instruments.
No.
We have a turntable
Samples.
And some old records.
Samples.
And
yeah.
a microphone.
Sampling, right? Yeah. Sampling, that's just yeah. what it was. Yeah, and I find that fascinating. One of the things I like to touch upon here, which is one of the things you told me, a second piece of advice you gave me after you said, don't fuck it up. The second piece of advice you gave me was, you know, just kind of just like...
That was the joke advice, by the way. Just for,
oh, was it?
For everybody...
This whole,
they think that's how I work with people.
This whole time.
Don't fuck this up. I do have a lot of levity when I work. Anyway, go ahead. Right.
This whole time I thought you were being honest. Anyway, but was, you know, sticking to like some theme, right? And like what would I want my audience or my viewers to take away, which is, you know, what would you say? What piece of advice would you give people to stay in a race of their own? you know, you're going to go through valleys and up and down and plateau and, you know, tumbleweeds throughout life. But what are those things that you would say if there was one thing you would tell someone, you know, because innovation, it sounds to me like what I'm grabbing from you, what I'm hearing is that innovation isn't just, first of all, it's not linear by any means. Mm-hmm. Being creative is not linear by any means. You know, there's going to be peaks and valleys, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes really high peaks and really low valleys.
Yeah.
And so what is, like, there's the one thing you would tell somebody if they're looking or thinking of an idea, if a viewer's thinking of an idea or something that they want to explore, what would be the thing that to help them stay on track, right, and stay on course?
This, I don't know if this is my best answer, but it's the one that I have in my head right now, which is remain unattached. Like, and practice remaining unattached, because unattached doesn't mean you don't care, you don't have a passion for it, just your emotional roller coaster that you go on if you're in any kind of creative pursuit of, like, oh yeah, we got a third meeting with this funder or that company, mm-hmm. or a collaborator, and then it doesn't go anywhere. It's like the expansion and contraction of your emotional experience is ridiculous. So when you talked about stillness earlier, it was like, can you be still even in that conversation? Like, right. I went from like, oh, I was counting the number of people that didn't email me back. Right. I'd be like, I had a spreadsheet of all my correspondences and so on and so forth. And I realized, like, I was holding each one of those missed opportunities, like, here.
Right.
And then when the great things come, you expect it to continue, right? Like, you expect the domino. But if anything that's universal is that life ebbs and flows. Mm-hmm. And even if somebody, like, you think is doing great on the outside and they're public facing, like, I just watched some clip of a podcast yesterday with Tony Rock, and he was talking about how Chris Rock has never put him in a movie. Mm. But that was the first time he had spoken about it. And so if you see him do a stand up and, like, you know, like, he's extremely funny to me, he's extremely talented. Yeah. And especially, like, for somebody who does comedy, right, you always see them like, haha, that person's silly. Like, same thing, ups and downs and peaks and valleys. And so that stillness just allows you to, like, know that, like, this is, have a knowing and a trust, mm-hmm. that you're going to be okay regardless, and your best self will come forward.
Right.
You may not know exactly when or how that's going to look.
Right. Interesting. And to be in the flow. To be in the flow.
And I'm not here to be like, oh, that's what you do.
I know.
It is a lot of practice. It's mm-hmm. a lot of, like, trials and tribulations. And then one day you go like, oh, there it is. I found the sweet spot.
The discipline of it.
Yeah.
And once you latch onto it, you're like, oh, yeah. Okay, I need to stay here for a little bit,
mm-hmm.
like, just feel what this is like. So I totally get that. Yeah. Thank you so much, Chris, for being here.
Thank you for having
Thank
me.
You so, like, you just your feedback and just everything.
Yeah.
Where can people find you? Where, you know, if they want to get your book?
My
your
address
book?
Is one. No, just kidding.
Your PayPal is.
Cash app on the lower third.
Cash app.
Cash app on the lower third.
Right, that part.
Your
book, where can people find your book?
Amazon. Sorry, I'm wishing time.
Yeah.
Amazon, Densonology on most social platforms.
Okay.
And just Chris Denson.
Awesome.
Google me.
Yeah. Google.
Put me in the baby machine. Google me.
All right. Thank you so much, Chris. And this is Virgie Rodriguez for A Race of Your Own. Leave your comments below. Please subscribe and take care. Peace.